Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and these days with the Eat Local food movement in full swing here in the New York area, we pay attention to where our fruits and vegetables are grown. How about our fish? With 80% of seafood in the U.S. coming from overseas, New Yorkers are starting to ask the question, how do we make seafood local again? And with good reason. Few states test imported seafood for toxins or antibiotics or banned drugs. A recent investigation by NBC News reveals 40 to 50% of fish from overseas tested positive for banned toxins.
Unfortunately, consumers can't tell if any of these compounds are in their seafood. You can't smell it, can't taste it, you can't cook it out.
That was Joe Basile, a chemist at the Alabama Department of Agriculture. Joining us to talk about all of this and what you can do about it is Paul Greenberg, author of Four Fish, The Future of the Last Wild Food. Also John Waldman, a professor of marine biology at CUNY. Both will be at an event on this topic tonight at the Seaport Museum beginning at 6 p.m. Also, our phones are open if you fish in the five boroughs, if you work at a fish market in the area or are an all-around fishmonger, give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Paul and John, welcome to WNYC. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Brian. Good morning, Brian.
So, Paul, this investigation by NBC News that we played the clip from, it says the FDA tests less than 2% of imported seafood, and so much of our seafood is imported.
Yeah.
Does the FDA need to do more?
Well, they should do more, but, you know, they just don't have the resources. I mean, when you go from a country that had, you know, 100% of its seafood coming from within its borders, i.e., you know, the United States, that's what we were 50 years ago, a net exporter of seafood, when in a very short period of time it goes becoming an importer of 80% of its seafood, you know, you just can't ramp up the regulatory structure fast enough to test all that fish coming into the country.
What are we missing? What do we should we be looking for?
Well, what we really should be doing is trying to rebuild domestic fisheries. You know, the last 50 years have seen a quintupling of the world catch and, you know, collapse of fisheries around the United States. But, you know, the thing is, this is reversible. We've seen, like with the American striped bass, a fish that we have locally in our waters, you know, this was a fish that was completely gone practically when I was a kid fishing, and now it's really been, you know, very, very successfully brought back from only 5 million fish in the sea to over 50 million. So, you know, we can do it. But we have to spend some money on it, and we have to really, you know, look very, very carefully at our marine ecosystems and try and rebuild them.
John Waldman, marine biology professor at CUNY. Do you happen to know how New York compares to states like Oklahoma and Mississippi and Georgia, who I think were mentioned in that NBC report, when it comes to testing seafood?
I don't know about a direct contrast, but I do know that New York City has been testing its seafood. They were concerned about the uptake of mercury, especially in the Asian population in the city, because they have a tendency to eat about three times as much seafood as other Americans, and they have been doing quite a lot of testing and finding a real mosaic of results. Some fish test very low, some fish test very high. It requires a great deal of awareness of where fish are originating from.
But I would add here, you know, going back to, like, what can we do, you know, we shouldn't have mercury in our seafood at all, and we can fix that. You know, the famous Jewish proverb, you know, the polite version, don't excrete where you eat, kind of comes into play when you talk about local seafood. And that's what we've been doing, you know, for the last few hundred years, you know, excreting physically actually human waste into the water, but also our industrial waste. And, you know, if we were to put mercury scrubbers on all our coal-fired plants, which the Obama administration is considering, you know, we would start to see this mercury problem go away.
John, the mercury is a problem in locally caught fish?
It's more of an open ocean issue. But I do think there's a very interesting, unique opportunity with the whole locavore movement and fish in this region, and that's that the Hudson River used to have a thriving commercial fishery until 76, when PCBs were discovered, and since then there's been essentially no commercial fishing because of the PCB problem, except for shad and sturgeon and blue crab. And right now, shad and sturgeon stocks have collapsed, so all we're left with is blue crab. So at some point, because of the PCB dredging that's going on in the hot spots, there will be an opportunity, I don't know whether it's 10 years from now or 20 years from now, to open up these fisheries and to tap this incredibly abundant resource. The fish are thriving in the Hudson. You just can't eat them. So we have a chance to kind of do it right from scratch. You know, typically commercial fishing interests are entrenched with traditions, and it's hard to make any changes to those practices. But I think we'll have a chance to completely reimagine the Hudson River commercial fishery at some point and to take high-quality fish from our local waters.
Listeners, if you are fish eaters, what do you ask at the fish market before you take a piece home? Are there any particular questions having to do with the origins or the safety of fish? 212-433-WNYC. Give us a call. If you work in a fish market, how about the changing origins of the fish that you sell? Are they coming from different places than they did 5 or 10 or even 20 years ago if you've been at it that long? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. For John Waldman, professor of marine biology at CUNY, and Paul Greenberg, author of Four Fish, The Future of the Last Wild Food. And, Paul, I want to ask you about the title of your book.
Yep.
Four Fish. It's the number four. Are there four particular species you look at?
Well, I look at four types, really, you know, sort of flesh archetypes. So I look at salmon, sea bass, which is, of course, a very broad category. Many fish are called sea bass. I look at cod, and I look at tuna. And mostly that's because, again, it looks at the range collapse of fish that we've seen in the last 50 years. You know, the diet of fish that we used to eat used to be much broader, many more smaller fish, many more crustaceans. But in this last 50 years, we've tended to focus on these big, carnivorous, very ecologically demanding fish. And in a way, it's kind of skewing the seafood market, I think, in a dangerous direction. What we need to be doing is eating, you know, more broadly in the spectrum of species, from oysters to clams to shrimp, all across the board, so that we spread our footprint more broadly across the ocean.
John, the event tonight at the Seaport Museum, is that South Street Seaport?
Yes.
Beginning at 6 o'clock. What's the focus? Who should go?
Well, I'm not sure that we have any room left. It attracted an enormous amount of attention. So I would call first to make sure that's even possible. But
okay.
I guess anyone interested in the health of the local waters and the prospects for local seafood to be caught in those waters.
What we're doing is trying to kind of rebuild the ocean from the bottom up in this seminar, and we're going to start with oyster restoration. Mark Kurlansky, you know, who author of the book The Big Oyster and Cod, is going to be there.
Right.
Then we're going to go sort of the middle of the water column and looking at small fish. A lot of people don't know this, but New York has local herring runs, and a lot of those have been impeded by dams, but there is now fish passage on the Bronx River that they're working on to get herring runs to really start to realize themselves.
Oh.
And then finally, we're going to look at some of the bigger fish. Carl Safina is going to be talking about tuna. And then we also have a really great organization called Sea to Table, which is trying to make direct connections with local fishermen and restaurants, trying to cut out the middleman so that fishermen can, you know, catch fewer fish but sell them for more money and treat them better in the boat and treat the fishery better. That's sort of the idea.
No free samples, though, huh?
No, there will be free samples. There will indeed.
Now the population's going to explode.
No, Blue Moon Fish from out on Long Island is very generously supplied us with some smoked swordfish, monkfish, and bluefish. And, you know, they'll probably be enough for a couple of crackers worth each.
Yeah, right. So. Adam and Clifton, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks.
If you go by Giant Stadium, by the Hackensack River, there's signs all by the river that say don't eat the crabs. A lot of fish that swim up there, such as striped bass, which a lot of people fish for, eat those bottom-dwelling animals. And in turn, if we start harvesting them, you know, I'm sure a lot of us would be ingesting those crabs and all those animals that we're not supposed to be eating. You know, it's, the waters are still very dirty, and, you know, I'm not quite sure of how much it's changed within the last 5 years since I've been fishing over there. But I think that's something to think about.
John, thank you very much. It's a great up the food chain question.
Yeah, there's a fundamental problem between bivalves and finfish. You know, when you take an oyster or a clam from the bottom, you know that individual spend its whole life in that spot. Finfish move all over the place. You can catch a striped bass that spent its last 5 years in the Hackensack River. You can catch one that was in North Carolina a week earlier in very clean water. So there's a huge variance in the contamination loads of finfish, and it makes it very tricky for the government to actually make recommendations. And this is just an ongoing problem. But I think the deeper you are into a system, the further you are up the Hudson or the further you are into the Hackensack, the more likely your fish has higher contamination levels.
By the way, you mentioned Giant Stadium. All the Jets fans are going to write in and complain now and say, it's New Meadowlands Stadium. Anne in New Rochelle, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Oh, hi. I had a question because I grew up on City Island in the Bronx, and I grew up fishing and eating my own fish, and mostly it was flounder, bluefish, and striped bass. And after a lifetime, I'm 35, is there an accumulation? Is there something I should be concerned about? How often should I be eating this fish?
It's a great question. Paul, should she get screened for anything as a routine?
Should. PCBs will stay in your body for a pretty long time, and particularly things like striped bass and bluefish. The higher level predators will have higher concentrations. So, you know, if you're thinking about getting pregnant, that kind of thing, you should take a look at it. And I would say, again, if, you know, women, the biggest at-risk group are really very small children and women of childbearing age. And if you've already had a lot of exposure to fish that are known to have PCBs and mercury, it's probably a good idea to lay off those and try and eat some of the lower trophic level fish as you go forward.
And thank you. And Peter in Carroll Gardens is a chef, and he's read your book, Paul.
Oh, great.
Hi, Peter.
How you doing? I loved your book, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you.
I can't go fishing because I get severely seasick, which I tried to do in Cabo, and it was just a nightmare. So I really live vicariously through your interspersed fishing trip stories, which are amazing. When I shop either for my business or for my family, I go to my local fishmonger, and I always ask if I can smell a piece of fish if I want to, and I think that's a really good thing to do. Larger stores like Fairway don't necessarily let you do that, which drives me crazy. I think it's important to let your customers do that.
You can't smell the PCBs.
I also focus. I love sardines and mackerel and all the oily fishes. I love bluefish, and I think that more people need to embrace them and start. My kid, she's three. She eats canned sardines all the time and fresh sardines when they're in season. So when they're available in the market. So.
Well, the small fish, your sardines, your anchovies, they're more plentiful in the wild. They're quicker to reproduce. They're more resilient to fishing pressure. Instead of feeding them to chickens, pigs, and salmon, which is what we do with most of them nowadays, we probably should be eating more of them ourselves. And they're an excellent source of omega-3s and also lower in pollutants.
We have 30 seconds left. Subtitle of your book includes the term last wild food, but when we talk about locavore eating, it often has to do with local agriculture. What about local aquaculture? Is there any, and would you oppose it?
No, I wouldn't oppose it, and there is some. There is a place called Cabbage Hill Farms that's doing aquaponics, where they grow fish in conjunction with a lot of leafy greens. I'm not so into the idea of doing open net pen aquaculture in salt water where disease transfer and all these kinds of bad things can happen.
And we have to leave it there with Paul Greenberg, author of For a Fish, The Future of the Last Wild Food, and John Waldman, professor of marine biology at CUNY. Both will be at the event at 6 o'clock tonight at the Seaport Museum. But as they said, this may be sold out, so call ahead there before you just show up. Thank you so much for coming on with us. Really informative.
Thanks, Brian. Thank you, Brian.